This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
And good morning and welcome to Saturday Magazine. Hope if you're in bed, you're nice and warm, and if you're up, you're nice and warm and you've had coffee, tea, water, whatever. I'm joined this morning by Sammy. How are you?
Good morning, Macca. How are you?
I'm very, very well. We've got a big show coming up today. We're going to be speaking to some people from the Queen Victoria Women's Centre, and I'm quite interested in that. It's going to be a good chat. Patrick Gilligan, one of our regulars from oursay.org. And
we've also got, also coming up, Jared Robb, who is a mountain runner. So it'll be very interesting to hear about his trek that he's going on.
Absolutely. So the first hour of the show is action-packed. But I thought we might start off today just talking a little bit quickly and briefly about Radiothon, which is coming up, and it starts on Saturday the 2nd of June. It runs through to the Friday the 8th of June. Very, very important for Joy, isn't it, Sammy? Because this is, as I say, we're on air, we don't run on air. This provides a huge part of the funding for Joy 94.9.
Yeah, this is pretty much our major fundraising push for the year. So basically the majority of money that comes into Joy is through our memberships paid by our wonderful listeners that help support us to stay on air. During Radiothon, we actually are encouraging all of our listeners that aren't members already to join up, and also those that are members to renew their membership. And the great thing about Radiothon is we always offer some amazing prizes available, and this year will be the biggest Radiothon
ever.
For Joy, because this year our main prize is a brand new car.
It is, and Joy, of course, is an adult now. It turned 18 last year on World AIDS Day.
Yeah, so legally we can drive, so legally we can give away a car.
Absolutely, and this is really, really important for us because, yes, it raises funds, and as Sammy said, if you're not a member and you listen to Joy, you should think about what your life would be like if Joy wasn't on air. And what keeps us on air is sponsorship. What keeps us on air is membership. What keeps us on air is fundraisers. And Radiothon is all of that.
And the other thing is, you know, when you think about, you know, the polls that have been done, you know, there's an average of 216,000 people that listen to Joy every month. And less than 10% of those people are members. So if we can even raise that this year to 20% of that, that will help us continue to provide the wonderful service that everyone continues to listen to 24 hours a day here.
Now, how much is membership?
Membership actually is a very reasonable. It's less than a cup of coffee a week. So individual membership for an adult is $72. We also offer various other memberships, concession under 18. It's only $96 for a family, and businesses are also encouraged to join. So,
and what can you buy for $96? You can't buy anything. Well, you can, but every week, like, that's less than $2.
Absolutely. And as a member of Joy, you know, you are eligible to win all the wonderful prizes that our sponsors do donate to us. Tickets to amazing shows, CDs, DVDs. We have amazing special offers. So, you know, it's more than just you're helping us stay on air. We're able to give back to you as a listener as well.
And I'm going to tell you what we're giving away as that major prize. It is a Jeep Wrangler Sport 2-door. Now, it's worth over $35,000, and that includes the on-road costs. Now, a Jeep, what an icon. An icon.
It is amazing. And the funny thing, just to get a bit historic for a minute, the word Jeep actually came out of, originally the vehicle was called a general purpose vehicle.
Oh, you've done your research.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So, of course, that was shortened to GP as general purpose. And then the word Jeep derived from that. So, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a vehicle that's played a huge role in popular culture around the world. And in terms of our culture, it's also played a big role. It had a starring role in, what was that English series? Queer as Folk?
Queer as Folk, that's correct, yes.
Had a starring role in that. It's not that one. It's actually a newer one than that. And we really have to thank the very, very generous sponsor who's come to the party with this. And understand, $35,000 on road. This is a huge prize. And we have to thank...
Essendon Jeep for their wonderful support of our station. And basically, with the on-road costs being included, the member that actually wins this walks into Jeep and drives away with the car, and they don't have to worry about anything else other than paying their insurance.
And I know that the general manager out there, John Byrne, at Essendon Jeep, he'll make sure that it is tuned to Joy 94.9. I know that John listens to Joy 94.9 a lot. I've known John a very, very long time, and he's been a significant supporter of our community over many, many years with his advertising and support. So, John, and to everyone at your dealership at Essendon, thank you. This is going to make a real difference.
Yes, I have had many a conversation about the history that you and John have known through the car industry. So,
yes,
it's lovely to have such amazing people and the support that we have.
It is. Now, you are on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9 with Macca and Sammy. Stay tuned because we have a really exciting and interesting show for you.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9 with Saturday Magazine with Sammy and Macca. And joining us now, we have Laura Svetkovsky and Anne-Marie Ferguson from Queen Victoria Women's Centre. Welcome.
Hello.
Good morning.
And how are you this morning? It's a beautiful, cold, wet Melbourne morning, isn't it?
Quintessential Melbourne, isn't it?
It is. It's one of those mornings where you just think, you wake up and you look out the window and you think, yep, I'm in Melbourne.
Yeah,
I'm in Melbourne. Because it's actually a bit warmer than Tassie, so.
Marginally.
Tell us a little bit about the Queen Victoria's Women's Centre before we get on to what you guys are doing. Just in general terms, a lot of our listeners may not know what it's about.
Well, I guess the Queen Victoria Women's Centre is both a heritage building and a not-for-profit organisation, which is in the city. The building that we work in was the remaining tower of the old Queen Victoria Hospital. We run programs for women by women.
And it's a fantastic, fantastic building, isn't it? And I mean, you know, if those bricks or whatever could tell a story, I wonder what story.
There's a lot of history. There was, just so we say, we had exhibition, we had a gallery exhibition there, and we'd invited anybody that had any relationship at all with the Queen Victoria building or the Queen Victoria Women's Hospital. And the stories that come out from folk, like there's a woman that came in the other day, it's the first time she's been in Australia for 40 years. She was actually born in that building. She comes from Greece, and she brought her husband over just to show him the building. So lots of tears and lots of big relationships. That's just like one of the beautiful stories of folk who have been touched by
the Queen Victoria Centre has an amazing history, which a lot of people may not realise, because in 1896, Queen Victoria actually encouraged women in the community to actually donate a shilling to contribute to the Queen to actually set up. And then within a year, they'd actually raised the funds by 1897 to actually start the Queen Victoria Hospital. So it's an amazing history of the organisation that's actually gone through from there.
It's an extraordinary history. I personally love being part of such... you know, the people, the steps that you walk in, the people who have walked before you, there's a lot of people who have walked before us with that building.
So you originally moved to that, the hospital then moved to that building in 1946.
That's right.
And operated until 1987, was it? So you're still, and you are actually in that original building in Lonsdale Street.
What's left of it, which is one tower. Yeah.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yes. The building this year is 100 years old, so it's the centenary year.
There's five levels, and it's got maybe 9 or 10 other separate women's organisations housed there, which is a beautiful hub for connection.
It's a bit like this building, which is, this one isn't 100 years old,
no.
But you know, as a centre of like-minded people.
That's right, the co-location stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
So tell us about the Shilling Centre, but also this glass wall. I'm fascinated by this, and I think, when I read about this over the last few days, and because I didn't actually know about it before then, I was blown away by what you've done with it and how significant it is for, you know, not just for Victorian women, but for Australian women as well.
Yeah, of course. In 2005, we created the Shilling Wall, which was made to stand as a monument to women. There's not that many monuments in Australia that are for women. It's a glass wall. It's got lovely colours, and it's got over 500 women's names inscribed on it. And the women, you know, their mothers, their grandmothers, their caregivers, sisters, friends, colleagues, community contributors, mentors, you know, people can put a woman's name on there sort of to, you know, pay tribute.
Do you have to pay a shilling? To
it was only a shilling.
It on. It's only a shilling.
What's a shilling was five pence.
Ten pence became ten cents. Yeah,
I think it's worth about $40 now.
Okay. So it's 40. No, 400 shillings.
So for someone to come along, they can actually pay a donation. It's $150, is it, to have a name? And it doesn't have to be a name of a woman that's actually inspirational within a community. It's someone that actually is inspirational to the person that's actually making that donation to get the name. So anybody, any member of the community can actually go there and put the name of someone that's inspired them personally.
I love how you put it like that, because that's my big push. Is this is not for high-profile people, per se. This is for ordinary women who do extraordinary things, and it's only because it has that impact on me, or it might have an impact on a community or to your family. But the idea, and I don't know how much you know about, you know, awards and honour rolls and all of that for men and women, but there's a very, very low representation of women in these kind of situations. So for me, it's about a kind of grassroots push opportunity for any woman that makes a difference in anybody's life, put the name forward and it stands in perpetuity. And I get back, so I'm going to talk my daughter into putting my name up, because I like the idea of my name on the glass shelf, glass wall.
Because you're right, there isn't, monuments or even
honor rolls,
museums,
yes.
Honour rolls.
Yep.
The role of women, and of course, right from, I suppose, the first white arrivals in Australia, the role of women was hugely important but not always recognised. What about Indigenous women? Are there some Indigenous women recognised on there as well?
We've got... I know for sure that the Wurundjeri elders are represented on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of history that includes, of course, the Aboriginal people's experiences with that building.
Yeah.
So it's the good and bad, people's relationships there. And that's something that we're very open to hearing about, people's experiences across the board. So one of the things that we've put together is a sheet, a document, and we're asking anybody that's had any experience to please put it in writing, and we'll gather that as historical documents.
Perhaps we should put... Julie Gillard's name there for her opposition to same-sex marriage.
She's already there.
She's already there. Oh, well, there you go.
Did we take her off?
Yeah.
Cheeky.
I mean, I think one of the challenges with something like this is getting people to understand, people to know it's there, isn't it? So that if people want to put a woman's name up there, for whatever reason, you said it was important to them or inspirational to them, how do they do that?
They just need to go to our website, which is www.qvwc.org.au, and there's a form on there that people can fill out and pay via the website.
The other option is making a phone call and having a chat with people at the office, and the one that's happening more frequently are people are coming into the building again to say hello, have a look, familiarise themselves, and then that's also where we can gather more history from or the other people, from people's experiences.
And the other thing is too, with you having, eight or nine specifically community-based women's organisations within the centre, is there are a lot of women actually passing through the building, and for them to also realise that this isn't about you being a high-profile person, it's about you donating the money and getting the name of a woman that's been inspirational to you personally, your mother, your sister, your boss, someone that's been there for you in your life.
A Joy Radio announcer that inspires you.
Well, we have quite a few nice, strong women here, so yes.
I think what's people's reaction, you know, when they come in and they, you know, and they stand there and they look at the wall? Is there any description as to why a name is there, or is it just... No, it's just the name is just there?
Because the space is at a premium, of course, as you can imagine, so we can only just take people's names. But what we do have, we do collate the story behind that, so that might not be on... might not be showcased, but we do collect that information.
Okay, so people can access that if they wish. They can
absolutely,
People can submit a significant statement about that woman as well, and that's accessible on our website.
And I think that's the other significant thing about what you're doing is through time and history is there has not been that many historical documents kept about women that have been inspiring, women that have had an impact on a community or people's lives.
And social this is change a, makers.
That's mm-hmm. right. And this is a great way because over the years it hasn't necessarily had to be a woman in a position of power. It's someone that's in the community that's got up and said, no, I'm going to help change this. And there's been a lot of women that have done that, but there's been no historical documents to
correct.
Support them in their journey.
And this is an endeavour to collate that and have her story heard.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And so many women that perhaps their names aren't known, but the role that they've also played in supporting both other men, other women and men in what they've contributed to society, often unheralded, that, I mean, certainly for, you know, mothers, that... you know, the role that, that mothers have played, you know, throughout history in terms of supporting and mentoring, you know, not just their kids but other mothers is really significant, isn't it?
And incredible significant. And I'd just like to push a little bit here that this is not just for women to nominate women. This is your sons as well or your partners or husbands or we're very, like, if men and women nominate brilliant women, that's a very good thing.
Mm. It's a good thing. Well, look, I think it's now, what, 6-7 years it's been going? And how many names?
Over 500.
Yeah,
500?
500. Mm.
And what's the capacity? How many more can we...
We can get 150 names for each panel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you're, you know, anyone out there who's listening who wants for a woman that they know to be noted because of their impact and their significance to them, doesn't have to be famous, doesn't have to be a Margaret Whitlam, please contact the Queen Victoria's Women's Centre because it is important that these things get noted and recorded and doesn't cost much. $150, what can you buy for $150?
And also don't forget, what was the website again?
QVWC.org.au.
And also remember that at the women's, there is so many wonderful supportive women's organisations operating at that centre as well. You can jump on the website and have a look at also the other community organisations for women that are actually at the centre.
That's right.
I'm going to have to go up and have a look one day because I drive past that tower and I think, isn't it great that tower is still there? So I actually wasn't aware that all the those organisations are in there.
It's not quite well known, is it, really? There's 9 or 10 extraordinary.
We'll be now.
Yeah.
We'll be now.
Pop your head down and we'll give you a cup of tea.
Lovely. This is Macca and Sammy on Saturday Magazine and we've been speaking with Laura and Anne-Marie from the Royal Victorian... Queen Victoria Women's Centre, and they've been talking about the Shining Wall.
Shilling Wall, sorry. It's Saturday morning, I know.
I've
had a bad morning. People getting in front of me in the traffic, it's completely unacceptable.
That's unacceptable, sir.
So thanks so much for coming in on this cold day, and good luck, and let's hope you fill up another panel really soon.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your support.
Cheers.
QNN Community Network News, I'm Jed Gilbert.
And I'm Nathan Partenza. In an historic move, US President Barack Obama has come out in favour of marriage equality. He becomes the first sitting US president to support legalising same-sex marriage.
At a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
Obama also spoke of his daughters, Sasha and Malia, who thought it was no big deal for their school friends to have same-sex parents. Although the change in Obama's stated personal views made international headlines, he emphasised that the issue should be decided by the US states, not the federal government. His announcement came shortly after North Carolina became the 30th US state to constitutionally ban marriage equality, but crucially it comes in advance of the upcoming presidential elections in November.
Following Obama's announcement, Prime Minister Julia Gillard maintained that her views are not changing and that she still opposes gay marriage. She reaffirmed that if the bill for marriage equality comes to the Australian Parliament this year, that she will be voting against it. Rodney Croom from Australian Marriage Equality expressed his frustration at Gillard not changing her position.
Well, so far, it hasn't changed Julia Gillard, but certainly in speaking to backbench members of the major parties in the last couple of days, they say it is having a big impact. In their eyes, in the eyes of their colleagues, it's mainstreamed the issue more, it's made it more legitimate, and it has focused their attention on it. So, yes, I think that it will have a major impact on our federal parliamentarians, even if they're not necessarily talking about that publicly at the moment.
Politicians and entertainers have joined forces as part of simultaneous rallies around Australia in favour of marriage equality. Organisers say more than 6,500 people turned out across the country as part of the Marriage Equality National Day of Action, including an apparent record number of heterosexual protesters lending their support to the cause. Among those to get a rockstar reception at the largest rally in Melbourne were Federal MP Adam Bandt and newly out comedian Magda Subansky.
There are people who live in parts of the globe where simply being gay will mean that they face the death penalty. We call ourselves the lucky country, and we are the lucky country. But if this country, with its peaceful history, with its affluence, with its harmony, if this country can't practice tolerance, how can we expect any other country to be capable of tolerance?
Almost 500 same-sex couples in Queensland could learn the fate of their civil unions within weeks. The state's Attorney General is examining the possibility of a full or partial repeal of the civil union laws and has confirmed a final proposal will be brought before Cabinet as early as this month. Prior to his election, Premier Campbell Newman said he would not repeal the laws if it left couples in legal limbo. But Attorney General Jared Blais says all options are on the table and there might not be rights to take away in the first place.
Briefly, in other news, Victoria's Deputy Chief Psychiatrist will remain on the board of the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission, despite publicly asserting that same-sex marriage would affect the future health of the nation. And prominent marriage equality campaigner Alex Greenwich has married his long-term partner Victor in front of family and friends in Buenos Aires. The pair were the first foreign couple to marry in the city, and Argentinian President Cristina Kirchner will now write to Prime Minister Julia Gillard, urging her to support gay marriage.
To QNN Sport, here's Tanya Lewis.
A gay airline called Fresh Air has just been launched in order to deliver passengers to the Gay Euro Games in Budapest this July. The company aims to fill the void left by traditional airlines by catering to a rainbow of tastes and sexual orientations. And US gymnast Josh Dixon has come out while competing in a qualifying event for the London 2012 Olympics. Dixon is the country's first openly gay gymnast, but he believes that coming out publicly will not affect his chances of making the Olympic team.
Thanks, Tanya. If there's a story out there you'd like to hear on QNN, then let us know. Email us on qnn@joy.org.au. That's QNN for this week. I'm Nathan Partenza.
And I'm Jed Gilbert. We'll have more for you next time on Community Network News.
This has been a news and current affairs program from the Joy Studios in Melbourne. For more gay and lesbian content, please go to joy.org.au.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
You are, of course, listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, Macca and Sammy. Now, if you're a member, that's good. If you're not a member, well, 2nd of June, which is when our Radiothon starts, that's when you need to join. And I know that our next guest, Patrick Gilligan from OurSay.org, I'm going to persuade him to become a Joy member if he's not already, because I'm sure he'd love to be. Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
Good morning, Macca.
How's
pleasure
things?
To be here. Things are very, very good. It's a bit wet outside, but
it
wet
is.
On the way here.
Yeah. Tell our listeners, oursay.org.au, what it's about. I mean, I know what it's about, but tell our listeners what it's about.
Of course. Well, oursay.org.au, it's an organisation that is fronted by a website. Probably the simplest explanation is that we are looking to bring the old town hall style format of question and answer between the public and politicians into a modern setting online, trying to engage social media and all those who are politically active online. And we do this by we run monthly topics. We say, for example, at the moment we have our communities, where we are hosting such leaders as former Deputy Premier of Victoria, John Thwaites, Fran Bailey, who is a former Howard government minister, and Stephen Mayne, who is a commentator and councillor. And so we're looking
to... It's an eclectic mix.
It is. It is a bit.
I'm actually from the electorate that Fran was actually our representative for quite a number of years up in the area of Whittlesea.
Okay.
So I
okay.
had a fair bit to do with Fran over my time being in her electorate.
Well, you could you definitely have the opportunity to ask her a question again.
Fantastic.
Now, well, the topic actually is it's all about bringing the community sector closer to, it's more central to involvement in public policy by way of giving more power to community, the community sectors. And so we're looking to for everyone out there to ask a question of our guest panel about how we can, give NGOs more power in shaping government policy.
Okay, well, each of those people has played a pretty important role in the communities that they've represented and advocated for. What sort of questions do you think, questions are people going to ask of them, do you think? Do you have a punt on that? What do you reckon?
I think anything revolving around funding for NGOs is very important, because that's an ongoing issue that NGOs are always facing. Anything to do with economics, really. Also about perhaps corporate responsibility, how business can get more involved in enhancing NGOs with their involvement in shaping public policy.
Now, something that has been discussed a lot this last week or so is President Obama's support for gay marriage, the New Zealand Prime Minister's support for gay marriage. We've seen business leaders coming out supporting gay marriage.
Yeah, we've also had the CEO of David Jones actually came out this week and said that he supports same-sex marriage, and also too with Penny Wong's interaction with Joe Hockey on Q&A. It has been likened to the impact that it's had on Australia as the same thing as as Obama.
That's right. I mean, it's been a huge fortnight with these things. With Obama was almost forced to do it, though, because his vice president Joe Biden surprisingly came out and said that he was comfortable. He was comfortable with same-sex marriage. And so that left, 2 days for the Obama team to scramble and clarify their position on same-sex marriage, because
as it was evolving.
That's right. It has been evolving since 2010 when he last
He's
said that.
He's given himself a very long reach to when he can actually, been put in a corner and announce how he actually feels about it.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, and it's not so much politically progressive as symbolically progressive, because his support for this, it's not progressing anything in politics by way of legislation in America or the introduction. He's actually done more previously in terms of legislation with the army, allowing
don't ask, don't tell.
That's right, yeah. Absolutely,
and healthcare.
And the thing is, too, I mean, America's legal system is, and their Marriage Act is actually totally different to the way we are in Australia. In Australia, the Marriage Act is actually a federally based law,
right,
where in America, it is actually a state by state. So he can stand up as the president and say, I support same-sex marriages, but it is up to each individual state to actually pass those laws.
That's right. And there's a huge number of states who are against it, in fact. Well, as we were saying, that this has, I guess, kicked off a domino type effect around the world. Importantly, I think, in New Zealand, the Prime Minister John Key, who is, interestingly, the Conservative Party leader, he's come out in support of this. And the opposition leader of New Zealand is in support of this as well. So I think that that is politically progressive and important, because that will, while there are no plans, immediate plans for legislation to be introduced, I think we will see that happen in New Zealand.
New Zealand has had same-sex unions for a number of years now, so it would be... people would consider it to be a natural step for them to actually be allowed the Marriage Act to be changed in New Zealand.
Exactly, exactly. And what we saw in Q&A this week is also important for the debate in Australia, because we are moving from it becoming a very political issue where lots of polis speak to becoming very personal for politicians.
It's actually pretty... I mean, I think Joe Hockey's a pretty decent bloke, but it's pretty hard, really, to defend opposition, you know, for polis like him to defend their opposition to it. Because in reality, I think people think, well, actually, it's probably not what you really think, Joe. You're just towing a line.
Do you think he is towing the line? Do you think that he...
Yeah.
I mean, because he said that he believes... it is right for you know, children to grow up with a mother and a father.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's what really got to Penny Wong, and she really bit down at that when he said that, and she concluded their little personal exchange with the words, and I quote, "I know what my family's worth," which is and Penny has previously been very mum on the issue, because she is, you know, she stated that she doesn't want to bring her personal sentiments into politics,
Penny has shown
but I think
that
she has a family.
That's right, but she's also shown that she has the ability to defend herself and defend the acts that she's working on in Parliament.
Yes.
But I personally think that in this instance, she did actually show us that she actually has taken the moral high ground.
Yes.
You know, that 2.5 minutes interaction is something that has been said in quite a number of different press agencies. It's part of our history now, and it has that impact, and it's been quoted as a watershed moment.
That's correct, and I think it is appropriate, because we will see this issue in Australia going to a conscience vote. I mean, that's where it is going to end up.
But politicians and conscience are an interesting mix. Now, following on from the budget, looks like the government's got the dead cat bounce from the budget, that they haven't really... there hasn't been any support, and I've got to say, I'm actually pretty pissed off.
Okay,
about the budget, because I think, you know, as someone that earns an income and likes to put money into superannuation, and I don't get any benefits from the government, I'm actually, and this will probably upset people, but I'm actually getting a bit tired of constantly paying out, you know, for families, whether they're, you know, it doesn't matter what they are, but until the government gives us absolute equal rights, I don't see why I should have to pay for everyone else exercising theirs.
So do you believe that it's the budget this time around is a very strategic budget, because that's what it seems like?
I think it's smoke and mirrors.
It does appear to have been designed to win back support from you know, lower income earners and families. You know, there are bonuses
good
for kids in schools, and you know,
I'm in favour of all that, but I'm middle-class welfare, I'm getting a bit tired of it. I know that sounds a bit... some people listening thinking, oh, my God, what's happening?
Well, I fall into that low-income, single-parent family bracket. But I even feel, as someone that, you know, likes to keep up on what's going in the budget and in politics, that this is pretty much a Band-Aid that's not going to stick.
Yeah. And what it is the people... You know, I was always taught, if you have more than what you need, you should share it, and I have no problem with that. And people that are missing out... they're the ones we need to be helping, not people that are actually doing okay. Let's give them some more money to try and bribe them to vote for us. I think it's a crock.
Well, it remains to be seen if it will help the Labor Party. I mean, their primary vote raised to 30%, which up 3 points. That's right. It's probably just the smallest shred of hope that they've received in a long time, because they've had a battering for a long time. And it shows that they're still way behind the coalition in the primary vote, who, despite dropping 6 points after the release of the budget, are still miles ahead on 45%.
Well, I've got a question you can ask some Labor MPs. Do they know where Centrelink is? Because they're going to need to know.
You're on Saturday Magazine with Sammy and Macca, and thank you so much for coming in and having a chat,
Patrick.
To us, Patrick.
And we'll see you again soon, and keep us up to speed on how those questions
will do. rsa.org.au. Jump on and ask a question about how the community sector should have more power when it comes to.
Thank you very much.
Developing policy. No worries.
Cheers.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
I reckon I'm going to be in trouble. All those old mad lefty friends of mine reckon Macca's going to the pot. But it's interesting, isn't it, that what we're seeing just before we speak with our next guest, Sammy, that the people that the system and the community should be looking after, they are being looked after, but not enough. But a lot of that money that should be going there is going further up the income scale.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, I mean, I fall into that single-parent, low-income-earning bracket. And, you know, I even find sometimes that, you know, like I said, it's a Band-Aid with this budget. It's a Band-Aid that's not going to stick. You know, they're giving us the, oh, yes, we're going to look after you, we're going to give you this, and we're going to make it look like that. But the reality is, for us, when it comes to tax time, we're actually not getting that money. Mm. You know, we're not getting that fix. And with everything else they're implementing,
well, they're taking it off me. Who's getting it?
Well, they're not giving it to me. But that's okay.
Anyway, here's something much more. People are going to be much more interested in. And I didn't know there was ever such a thing as mountain running. And we have a special guest in the studio, Gerard Robb. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Welcome. Mountain running. Isn't running hard enough without finding a mountain to run up?
That's a pretty good call, actually. But mountain running is a great challenge, and often it takes you to places you probably wouldn't normally go to practice and train, and you can get some, being up at high altitude, you can see some great scenery and just a different climate to what you probably would normally do, say, just normal cross-country running or any other sort of running.
So you've obviously you're competing with a club, with Athletics Victoria as well. So you're doing long distance and cross country running with them.
Exactly right. You've done your homework.
So what club are you actually competing with?
I run with Old Scotch Collegians. Incidentally, today we got the APS 10 relays at the Botanic Gardens. So kicking off about 2:30, everybody's going to crank it up there. So it's a real dash, just one lap of the 10. So we're all Old Scotch. Actually, look like we got a pretty good team, so I think we're in the game, as one of my teammates said, so looking forward to that.
That's always been quite an interesting. I was involved with athletics for a number of years. I was with Collingwood Harriers, and I was a long distance race walker, but we, as the long distance team, we also worked in with our long distance race road teams and the cross country teams as well.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great community, the running scene in Melbourne. I think probably in Australia, I think it's the strongest. You get really, really good participation. We actually had the Athletics Victoria Gerald's Park relays a few weeks back, and they had over 1,000 participants for the relays there, and Craig Mottram was out, and a few Olympic athletes were out, so it was really good to see that.
And the good thing is during the summer season, which traditionally for long distance running can be the off season for a lot of people, you still have some great events on. You've got the Zatopek and everything that's on during the year as well.
Yeah, the summer track season that keeps everybody honest. So for those who've got that real raw leg speed, they enjoy that. And so there's all like basically most track and field Olympic distances and even like your other disciplines like your shot put, javelin, you can also do over the summer for Athletics Victoria meets.
Now you were, and I see here that you you qualified for the World Mountain Running Championship in Brescia, Italy, and Brescia, I know for another reason, a very well-known motoring journalist used to live there, Peter Robinson. He lived there for 11 years, and it's a beautiful, beautiful part of Italy. But also, you represented Victoria in the championships in Tasmania.
Yes, that was the selection race to make the team for Italy, and that was a great experience. Mount Wellington, and so basically, just to give the listeners a brief rundown, a 12-kilometre course, basically from the base to the summit, you're actually ascending 1,000 metres elevation. So basically, once you get up around 1,000, that's usually, if it's cold enough, you're going to get some snow, and actually, sure enough, we hit around about that. I knew I was getting near the finish because there was snow everywhere. So quite steep gradient and a real challenge. And then just coming up over the last little ascent, we hit this probably 300 metres of flat before the actual goal and the finish line. And there's this Arctic blast just hit you in the face. So basically then it was actually a similar surface to the tan track. So I thought, right, I have to pull out the cross-country legs and then just give it a one last final crank. So it was a really great experience just going down there, and Tasmania's got beautiful scenery as well.
I was going to say, the scenery, you know, you're trying to concentrate on your running, but the scenery would be quite distracting, but also the terrain, isn't it? Because it's not a running track. Like, you've really got to watch where you're putting each foot, don't you?
You do, really, and I think it teaches you a lot of things, mountain running. Like, if you were to if you were to just look straight to the top of the mountain and not focus on what you're doing first and foremost in front of you, you'd probably fall flat in your face. So I think it teaches you a few things about life as well, and just focusing on the task at hand, and then you'll get there. So, but it's interesting, the terrain does change. As soon as you hit around that 1,000-metre elevation, all of a sudden the air changes and thins out a little bit, and the vegetation, everything. It's just quite beautiful. And I must admit, you are focusing on the race, but I always try and make a point at some stage in a race to just have a quick look to the side. And I remember looking across and seeing the Derwent River, and you could see all of Hobart, and it was quite... quite beautiful.
So in your preparation for your next step with being mountain running, will you actually go and race at higher altitudes to prepare your body for the difference, like what when we have Olympics in different countries around the world, when the athletes are actually competing at higher altitudes, they actually have training camps at those altitudes to acclimatise their body?
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be a few lead-in races to the Worlds. I'm actually going to do Mount Fuji, which is 3,000 metres elevation, run to the summit. So that's going to be great. And there's also been an invite to a race in North Wales, again, quite decent altitude. So
you need to go somewhere warmer.
Yeah, that's the bit of a dilemma at the moment. It's still kind of going up to Mount Buffalo and Mount St. Leonard's around Victoria. As it gets colder, I definitely need somebody at the summit to quickly whisk me that back down, because we don't want to get hypothermic or anything.
Now, how do you... I mean, obviously, there's costs involved in this. How do you cover those off? How do you get there and, you know, stay place? How does it all happen?
Well, basically, I am searching for a major sponsor, if anybody would like to help. I do work pretty much full time to fund it. And there's also a little bit. The Australian Mountain Running Association do help out a little bit. And for example, sometimes international races do invite you and pay for expenses. For example, the race in North Wales leading into the World Champs, they'll pay for all accommodation, travel expenses around there, but you still need to pay for the airfare to get there. So any sponsor out there that may like to help...
Deep pockets, this is what you need to do. And how do they find you? Just Google you?
Probably the easiest way. Most people these days are on Facebook, so my name, Jared Robb. If you search me on Facebook, you'll see... probably the easiest way to identify, you'll see a picture, a little icon of me barreling down a mountain with Australian uniform on, so you can't miss me there on Facebook. So, yeah, please, anyone who's actually interested in running or anything to do with the athletic scene, yeah, don't hesitate to ask me. I have plenty of contacts around Melbourne, so somewhere, whether it's running cross-country or track or running up mountains, I'm sure we can find a home for you.
Great. Well, look... good luck with what you're doing. I think it's fascinating. I didn't know anything about mountain running. I now do. So hope you get some more support, and thanks for making the time to come in. You can go down and run up and down a couple of flights of stairs.
Great. Thanks,
good luck,
guys.
For September. Excellent. And all of us here at Joy wish you all the luck.
Great. Thanks, guys, for having me on.
Cheers.
Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine. Now, what a very, very different show. We had a couple of the girls on from the Queen Victoria Women's Centre. We had Patrick Gilligan from OurSay, and we had a mountain runner.
Yes, it's been quite an eclectic mix this morning, Mac. Are you exhausted yet
running? I'm exhausted from it all, just watching it all, you know. But mountain running, I didn't know anything about it. I mean, you would see the... In a lot of ways, I think it'd be more intense, because you have to watch where you're going so much more, because you're not on a track, and there's the scenery to distract you, and there's the change in the, you know, in the air temperature and the air, you know, in the air thickness or whatever.
Yeah, well, as you get higher up, the air thins out, and your body has to actually work harder.
It does. Now, coming up in the next hour. Oh, what have we got? Oh, look, we've got Pete Dillon. He's going to talk to us a bit about Terps and Tucker. We've got Community Roundup. We've got Vets. We've got Sport. We've got Webmaster. So stay tuned. You're on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine, and Tim Lennox, I did not touch the newsreader. I'm not guilty.
Yes, Pinocchio.
Yes. Now we're going to have a little chat with Pete Dillon. He's in Noosa, I believe, and he's up there for the Food and Wine Festival otherwise known as the Terps and Tucker Festival. So I hope it's warmer up there than it is down here, Pete. So I'm interested to know, Noosa. I mean, obviously I think there'd be a bit of a, probably a bit of a concentration on fresher and perhaps more exotic food. Are you there, Pete?
Of course I'm here, Macca. Good afternoon. Oh, good morning.
Good morning. What's the temperature?
Early to mid-20s.
Lovely. Humidity?
Very low. We're sitting out by the pool. It's as clear as a bell. It's a terribly gorgeous day.
Oh, you poor Dale.
Good morning, Pete. Sammy here. How are you, Dale?
Hi, Sammy. How are you?
I'm very good. I think you're just rubbing it in a tiny bit too much. We're down here in cold old Melbourne and it's a bit frosty.
Look, I just had a tweet that it's raining and people are feeling a bit revolting in the rain, and I thought I'd rub it in because it is incredibly pleasant. I was wondering whether I should bring a jacket, but instead I had to get out some sunscreen.
Oh, darling, if you've got it, flaunt it.
And, of course, my pale lily-white skin.
Yes. So the food at Noosa Food and Wine Festival, Pete, tell us about that.
It started on Thursday and it's running through until tomorrow. It is a showcase of some of the country's best chefs. There are some chefs here from overseas as well. And, of course, there's winemakers. It's a general public thing, so people are wandering around Lions Park just up behind us. We're here at the Sheraton. They're up behind us at Lions Park wandering about. There's tastings and all sorts of things that people are indulging in already. People on the Vino, I'll have you both know that I haven't started yet.
Oh. Well, have you run out?
I just can't find the bar at the Sheraton.
How long does the festival run for, Pete?
It runs until Sunday night, so it'll be all over tomorrow. They've had Anthony Kalia performing up here last night, Sneaky Sound System around this evening. So it's become quite a big four-day a festival in every sense of the word.
Oh, fabulous. They're pulling out all the stops with the entertainment as well. It's great to see.
And then some of the names that people would know, of course, Simon and Maggie are both here from the Cook and the Chef on the ABC. There's been, you know, every second person from MasterChef, so Poe's here, Adam's here. Kate Brax is here. I believe I saw Julie Goodwin hoofing up the street not so long ago. And then some of our good mates from Melbourne, Ben Shuri's here. We'll try and have a chat to Ben a bit later. We're going to talk to Alistair McLeod. You may know Alistair. He's the little Irish fellow from Ready Steady Cook and has his own TV show, owns a couple of restaurants in Brisbane. Peter Kuravita, who's from Flying Fish in Sydney, he's a Sri Lankan fellow. We'll chat to him as well. Ian Curley, he's from Melbourne, of course, but did the Channel 7 show with the disadvantaged folk. He's going to swing by. Look, there's going to be a cast of thousands on the show.
Now, I'm interested because Noosa is obviously it's a holiday destination, but it's also a place where a lot of Australians retire to, and.
Please be nice, Macca.
Well, you know, a lot more... Okay, more Australians where the government hasn't ripped the guts out of their super yet. But what you've got there is, you know, you have a lot of restaurants and, you know, and there are increasing numbers of wineries in the region. How do the restaurants balance the need for the tourist dollar with the permanent resident dollar? Because the permanent residents probably... are a bit more interested in, you know, taking a bit longer to dine and, you know, rather than going somewhere else, or perhaps they want a different type of food, or am I on the wrong track? He's dropped out. What do you think about that, Sammy? Because I think, you know, in Noosa, you know, where you have two very different populations, so you've got to balance, you know, the tourists where, you know, they predominantly they want value, and everyone wants value. So you're back there again, Pete?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did you hear my question?
Yeah, you're asking about the permanent residents versus tourists.
And the balance. How do the restaurants balance and wine bars, etc. How do they balance that?
Macca, it's an interesting question. Noosa is one of those places that pretty much has a year-round tourist population and a very itinerant population. A lot of backpackers up here as well. How that balances with the restaurants is a question I'm probably not the right person to answer, and I'm hoping I can talk to another chef today who might be able to answer that question for you, because those permanent residents here, look, Noosa is growing. We're staying about 20 minutes out of town with some family, and it's, you know, they come into Noosa for food and wine. So there's a fairly divergent population, not just in Noosa, but as Noosa is growing, so Noosaville, Noosa Sound, and the surrounding areas, there's a fairly... and there's a lot of development going on as well. So I think as well as retirees, there are people who are simply making a fee change to here.
I mean, it's a question I'd love you to ask a couple of the people that are, you know, operating restaurants up there, and perhaps cover it off in a Cravings or have another chat to Sat Mag on about it, because I think it is a challenge, because you've got a very cost-conscious customer base and one that's perhaps not as cost-conscious, and different demands for different types of food, and, you know, making money in a restaurant's never easy.
I guess that's reflected in the diversity of the food that is up here, and that's probably why this festival is here. There is, you know, you can get everything from a tiny little sandwich and a coffee at $5 or $6, right through to some fairly high-end dining. And not just here, but, you know, on the way into Noosa, there's a place called Tawantin. Tawantin's the home of Matt Kalinske, another chef who tragically lost his family in a fire on Boxing Day. So there's the surrounding areas have some really interesting dining options as well. And there are stalwarts that have been here forever. Barado's, we spoke to Shane Bailey last week. He's the exec chef at Barado's, and they're one of the driving restaurants.
So you're actually going to be having your show today, which of course is Cravings on Joy 94.9 at 1 p.m. And you're actually going to be doing that direct from the festival today.
Presenting it live from the poolside of the Sheraton, Sammy.
Oh, I can hear that you're doing it really hard up there, Pete.
Look, gasping for soda water. it is. It's a perfect location. The weather is beautiful. There's a lot of very happy people. We've bumped into a number of folk already just in the lobby this morning that are well known. You know, Matt Preston's up here. There's a number of our good friends from Melbourne who are up here taking part in a critics challenge. So there's a really big program that's running over the 4 days, and this festival, like Melbourne, will only get better as it continues to grow.
So who exciting have you got on for an interview on the show for this afternoon?
Alistair McLeod, who is, I said, from Ready Steady Cook and has his own two restaurants in Brisbane. We'll probably talk to Fergus Henderson. Fergus is a nose-to-tail specialist all the way from the UK. I'll be chatting to Peter Kuravita. You'd know him from MasterChef as well. Ben Shuri from Attica in Melbourne, Ian Curley, who's from the European in Melbourne. We'll be talking to a raft of folk. Ben Batterby, who's here from New Zealand. So there's loads.
Well, I reckon you're going to have a lovely time. Bit of Terps and Tucker never does any harm, does it, Pete?
Oh, yeah. You know I like a bit of Terps and Tucker, Macca.
Well, good luck. Hopefully it, you know, doesn't get too hot later in the day. For those people who didn't hear the last bit, Pete's going to be broadcasting live from the pool at the Sheraton in Noosa. Anyone going to be rubbing your feet?
My partner is here, who's playing my executive producer. He's listening to the program, making sure it all sounds all right. But no, I don't let people touch my feet, Macca. I've got a bit of a thing about feet.
Oh,
fantastic. Well, we look forward to hearing your wonderful show this afternoon at 1 p.m. here on Joy 94.9. And this is, of course, Pete Dillon, who is on Cravings.
And don't ever touch his feet.
Thanks, guys, and enjoy the cold weather down there.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, Pete.
Cheers. You're on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Yeehaw! Now, in case you didn't know, it's that time where we have Community Roundup, and of course, you know, if you want to have your community group an announcement on Community Roundup, Saturday Magazine at joy.org.au, you can send it to us, and we will put it on because it's very, very important. Now, the first one is Melbourne Chargers, which are Melbourne's gay and inclusive rugby club. The Melbourne Chargers are in the final stages of their preparation to compete in the international gay rugby competition known as the Bingham Cup. It's considered the World Cup of Gay Rugby, and the Bingham Cup was established in 2002 and named after the gay American rugby player Mark Bingham. He died at age 31 during the September 11 attacks in 2001. The Melbourne Chargers Bingham Cup Farewell Barbecue is at the Laird Hotel, 149 Gipps Street, Abbotsford, on Sunday, which is tomorrow, May 20th, from 5 p.m. Should be fun.
And we've also got Vintage Manor having a get-together lunch at Northcote RSL on Thursday, May 31st, and that'll be between noon and 2pm. So for information on this event and also to find more about Vintage Men, go to www.vintagemen.org.
And Midsummer, which comes up at the start of the year, next year. Next year is their 25th anniversary, and they've started raising funds for the 2013 festival this week. It's really simple. If you want to donate, midsummer.org.au.
And also to find out more information on how to volunteer at Midsummer, you can go to that web address as well.
You can. And as I said, if you want your announcement on Community Roundup, email saturdaymagazine@joy.org.au, and we'll read it out with elan.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine, Macca and Sammy, and we are having fun today, and we're going to have some real fun in a moment because Dr. Tristan Rich is from the Lort Smith Hospital and he has got the best title. He is the head of exotics.
And I think, Tristan, you need to explain what an exotic is before he gets too excited.
Yeah, sure. Exotics generally is anything that is not a dog or a cat. Kind of gets lumped into the group exotics.
So could Sammy and I be exotic?
Oh, yeah, I think we could probably
organize.
We already are exotic, man.
We are exotic.
So would that obviously, does that also include, I mean, with outside the dog and the cat realm, so you're including things like guinea pigs, rabbits, and then all the way up to exotic birds, reptiles?
Yeah, exactly. So most of my work is, a lot of it is around rabbits and guinea pigs and a lot of reptiles and a few birds.
What's the smallest animal that you've had to attend to at Lort Smith?
I did actually see probably my smallest patient ever last week, which was a little 3-gram baby bearded dragon. So pretty tiny.
3 grams?
3 grams.
I mean, how big is that? Is that like fingernail?
Fingernail. It's quite long. It's basically a hatchling.
So how did you come across having a 3-gram bearded dragon as a patient?
Oh, it was brought in by an owner. Somebody owned it and they brought it in because it was quite unwell. We had it in hospital for a few days, needed some treatment. And
what, in a matchbox?
No,
like it would almost be like a... I mean, how do you... Something so small, I mean, how do you work out what's wrong with it?
Yeah, well, it's very fiddly. Fingers are a bit bigger than 3 grams, yeah.
What an amazing owner, though, to know that something that was actually the size of somebody's fingernail to actually go, oh, now hang on a sec, there's something not quite right.
Yeah, it was pretty unwell. It was quite lethargic and looking very flat. So we actually had it in hospital for a few days and had to put a big sign on the cage that there was actually something
there. Something in there, yeah. What about the biggest? What's been the biggest?
Oh, the biggest. It's hard to...
Any elephants?
To think. No, I haven't gone quite that big. See a few quite large snakes. You can never go past those huge dogs that you often get in, the 90-odd kilo dogs.
I'm amazed. I mean, the sheer breadth of what you have to do, I'm blown away by this 3 gram.
And I suppose the other thing too with a lot of people that don't realise is qualifying as a vet, you know, you're actually doing the same sort of studying and course that someone would actually do to be a doctor, but you're actually having to learn a variety of species where as a doctor you only have to cover one.
Just humans.
Mm. Yeah, there's a popular saying amongst vets that real doctors treat more than one species.
Okay.
I have to remember that next time I go to the doctor. Oh, you only treat one species.
So would you like to tell us about our puppy of the week this week?
Our pet of the week.
Yeah, sure. So our little stray of the week is Tink. She's a fox terrier cross. The age has just slipped in my mind for a second, sorry. She was surrendered because her previous owner's situation changed and they're unable to keep a dog anymore. So looking for a new loving family for her. She's quite active, I think, and she does like kids and is grown up around families, so she'll make a wonderful family pet.
So, and of course, Tink is house-trained, I would imagine.
Yeah, she's ready to go.
big thing.
So if we have someone interested in looking at adopting Tink, how do they go about that?
We either want to head to the website, www.lotsmith.com, or give the shelter a ring, which is 9321 7260. We could always drop in between 9:30 and 3:30.
And, of course, if you get there and Tink's already found a loving home, there are lots of other animals that need people's assistance for them to take home as well.
Yeah, there's plenty of other animals that are raring to go.
Now, Lordsmith's been going a very long time, hasn't it? I think we did talk about this once before. Do you remember how many years? I mean, you haven't been there all those years.
No, not quite. It started in the 30s, I think 1936, yep. Off the top of my head. So it has been going for a very long time. It's a great institution, and not many people know it's there, Tuptoane, North Melbourne.
I suppose the name, a lot of people would have heard the name because it's unusual, Lordsmith, but they probably don't know where it is. I suppose one of the challenges is people don't always realise that funding for an organisation like that is so important for it to keep going, and I know that people do leave, you know, do leave money in their wills, and of course when they adopt a dog or a cat or whatever, they often make another donation. But it must be a bit challenging to keep the organisation funded, because, you know, if it's not there, well, the animals are the ones that are really going to suffer, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is a huge organisation, and we get no government funding, so rely solely on bequests or donations, or the treatment of the animals as private patients coming to the hospital do fund the shelter.
And that's the other great service. Lordsmith is not just about abandoned and animals that are unable to be cared for by the owners being put up for adoption. Lordsmith has a long-running reputation of being an amazing hospital vet clinic, and they're able to treat, as with you being head of exotics, a variety of animals for people that, you know, either from getting your cat spayed to, you know, your snake's got an upset tummy because the rat wasn't quite right.
Yeah, exactly. I think the main function of Lordsmith originally was set up for people with limited funds, so it is, most things are discounted, and there is an opportunity to pay things off, where a lot of vets can't offer that service.
And you also do offer after-hours services for people that, you know, quite often someone will find that something's wrong with their animal after hours where their local vet's closed, and, you know, you do have that service available for people as well.
Yeah, exactly. The hospital's open till 12:30, so it's not 24 hours at this stage, but there's consultations up until 12:30.
But, of course, if you had the funding available by people donating money, then that service could be offered eventually.
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
Now, one of the things that's been in the I've heard talked about on radio a little bit lately is whether or not cats should be restricted in terms of, you know, people that have domestic cats, whether they should be restricted. What's the hospital's view on that? I mean, the RSPCA has a view. Does Lordsmith have a view on that?
My own personal view is that I do believe in restricting cats, especially at night time. Roaming cats do lead to population problems. Sorry, yeah. Increases. Yeah, so population control wise, you definitely need to desex your cats if you're not going to breed from them. But there's also a multitude of diseases that they can spread between each other.
Yeah,
and then on the other side, there's also the problem,
the damage
the
that they can do to the natural wildlife. Well, myself, I live in a country area. I have a cat which I actually rescued myself. He was a feral cat I found abandoned in the bush as a very young baby. Now, he has his natural basic instincts extremely strong. Now, my cat is always contained at night because they are a natural hunter. And I think that's a great thing that they're starting to actually promote and get people to realise that, yes, cats are an amazing animals and they're fantastic pets, but at the end of the day, any animal's basic instincts will kick in when they're left for the devices for those instincts to work. And cats will go out at night and they will hunt, and majority of time that's when they're getting to the wildlife.
Yeah, they're very efficient hunters as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, well, my cat keeps my house and farm free of rats and mice and vermin.
I mean, it's an interesting subject, and I agree. I think at night they should be contained, because quite apart from all of that, the amount of times that I see cats that have had a competition with a car and have lost, and invariably that is at night. So not so much an issue with dogs, although I don't know, there seems to be a few stray dogs around where I live that I don't know why their owners let them out at night. If you want to support the Lord Smith Hospital, and why wouldn't you, then go onto their website. I'm sure you can find many ways to support them. And if you're looking for a pet, today's pet Tink, little Foxy, in a nice little jacket there, go to Lord Smith, and if you think you can adopt it, you should, and perhaps make a little donation too. Thanks again to Dr. Tristan Rich, Head of Exotics at Lord Smith.
That's okay.
Hope you have a nice day.
Yeah, you too.
What's planned for the rest of the day?
Some boring house stuff. Shopping,
some boring house
washing,
stuff.
You know.
You're listening to Sammy and Macca on SatMag on Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9, the home of Radiothon, which is coming up on the 2nd to the 8th of June. And we're going to be giving away a car as the major prize in Radiothon this year. And it is a Jeep Wrangler Sport valued at $35,000 on road. I'm not going to tell you who it's from more than once, because otherwise I'll get in trouble. But it is from a dealer who is well known to Joy listeners, very, very big supporter, and John Byrne from that dealership has been a big supporter of our community over many, many years in advertising, and he works in the car industry, and he's done that for a long time. Sammy, how did we come to get this fantastic relationship? I'll say who it is. It is Essendon Jeep. So if when you drive to the airport and on the right you see all those signs, when you've gone past the Coles and all that stuff, there's a car dealership, Essendon Jeep is there. How did we get the relationship with Essendon Jeep, and how did we come to get a car?
Amazing sponsorship team that we have here at Joy. Now, Joy being a community radio station, we survive on donations, memberships, and also sponsors. So the sponsorship announcements that you actually hear here on Joy are put together by our team, and our team's been working with John for a while now on the way that he wants to be able to support our community and our station, and it's come about that he has given us this amazing vehicle for us to have as our prize for one lucky member who rejoins or pays their membership during our Radiothon period.
So if you're not a member and you're listening, you know you bloody well should be a member. 2nd to the 8th of June is when it is. Now, of course, on Friday, the 1st of June, is the launch party, and that's at D&M's. Who have we got performing and looking after us there?
Oh, we will have a plethora of Joy announcers there.
A plethora?
A plethora.
A plethora.
Of course, yes, we have to use those amazing rainbow words. So we will have a lot of well-known voices from Joy there. We got a combination of our breakfast and drive teams, and also from our specialist music programs. Amazing acts. The lineup is going to be so much fun. Empire Live, of course, Luke Gallagher, the very talented Jade Leonard, who has just released a video clip for her song, and including many, many other acts. Cabaret superstar Tina Del Twist will be making an appearance.
Great.
We also have Lockie Bryant, who is a signed country music artist. So showing here at Joy that we're not only about dance music and our popular music, our specialist programs, including Q Country here on Joy, have an amazing array of tastes and music.
So stay tuned for that. If you wanna win a Jeep Wrangler, $35,000 drive away, no more to play, no more to pay, then you know where you're going to win it. And you can only win it if you're a member, and if you're not a member, you bloody well should be. Anyway, now we're going to talk some more about Joy. We're going to speak with Pete Jarvis. And Pete Jarvis he's got a really, really important role here at Joy. He's the webmaster at Joy, and I know how many requests you get. Oh, can you just put this up on the website? And then 5 seconds later, they ring you back and say, I can't see it yet.
Yes, you get a few requests coming through, and but everyone's pretty good usually. Everyone's pretty good. Sometimes I get it up and they're like, oh, it's up already? It's like, yeah, it's all done for you.
So first off, what brought you to Joy? How did you discover us, and how long you been around here?
Well, a friend of mine put me on to Joy about a year and a half ago. Told me about it. I didn't even know that Joy even existed. and started listening, got into some of the shows, and by chance, actually, I ran into a friend, Andrew Wheatland, who is actually one of the guys on another show here. Can I plug another show?
Yes, Spirit
Lounge. Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock. Yeah, so I started helping those guys out with their podcasting because they needed somebody to help them out. So came in and Andrew gave me a tour of the place and got to meet some of the guys. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'll have a go at volunteering here and helping out. So,
and then you probably got who cornered you and persuaded you that webmaster, or did you put your hand up? Was it Nick Bassett? Did he intimidate you into it?
Actually, it was Chris.
It was Chris, huh?
Chris, yeah. So I got cornered by Chris Jameson here, and he asked if I'd be happy to help out with some of the content management and stuff for the website, and I thought, yeah, why not?
And Chris and also Pete has been an amazing help with us with Radiothon, putting up with me as one of those people coming to
no
him.
No problem at all.
Petey, can you please put this up and change this for me? And Pete and I got to know each other at Pride March this year.
We did. We were blowing
we
up balloons.
We marched together. So, yeah, it was great to sort of see Pete out, being part of the Joy family also too at Pride March this year.
It was awesome.
Now, our web page is a really, really important part of Joy, because not only is it where people can listen live on the web, but it actually tells people and gives them information about Joy. They can download podcasts from there, of course, if they haven't downloaded the app. But it must be a real challenge, you know, because uploading it and keeping it up to date and making sure that people give you the information.
It can be a challenge sometimes, but it's just a case of keeping on top of emails and everything coming through, and making sure that what information is actually put up there is still current and that's still up to date. Sometimes, every now and again, it does slip, and something's up there for a day later, but I do get it down as quickly as possible and put up the new stuff. So.
Because we, of course, also, too, on our website, we have links to some of the great sponsors that we have here at Joy, a lot of the competitions that we have running. There's also a great catalogue of photos from various Joy events that have actually been run.
Yes, I'm actually in the middle of uploading some photos, actually, from this year's Pride March and everything else like that, which has taken a little while longer to get up there, but it will be up there soon, guys. So if you go and have a look shortly, you'll be able to see all the little happy snaps from that parade.
Now, what do you like? What do you like most about Joy?
Ah, the people. The people mainly. It's great. You come in and everybody's just really welcoming. And yeah, it's like having a second little family.
It is, isn't it?
It is. It's really cool.
Now, where to next? Do you think, or you know, what else would you like to try at Joy?
I'm thinking about actually doing a Taste of Radio course here, and having a go at maybe eventually starting my own show or doing a show here, and yeah, that'd be great.
What sort of show?
It'd be on current, I don't know, current sort of poppy music sort of thing, but twisted with a little bit of sci-fi. I talked to Sonia actually, yeah. From Sci-Fi and Squeam. I love her show.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, so something similar along those lines, maybe a little bit geeky, but a little bit poppy. I don't know.
So the Taster Radio course that Pete's actually talking about is a course that we run here at Joy for people that are interested in having a show on air, putting together a proposal, learning about how the station works as well. So for any information on the Taster Radio course, they can go to our website, joy.org.au, and click on the Taste of Radio, and that will take you through to all the information available. And the courses run several times a year from February through to November.
And the courses, I've been told, are fantastic. I haven't done it yet, but I'm looking forward to actually giving it a go.
They are absolutely brilliant. Everyone should come in and have a look at it, even to just learn a little bit more about how we work as a station.
Exactly.
And, of course, the web page is constantly changing, just as the, you know, the technology at Joy is changing. Like, we have these fantastic new clocks which keep us all on time. Mm-hmm. If there's one thing that you'd like to add to the website, or that you think you know, you're looking at, what's that? Is an enhancement you'd like?
There's a couple of enhancements, actually, but all sort of all in due course.
All in time.
We've got to keep it under the curtain there.
Keep it secret.
But also, Pete, like the rest of us, volunteers, and we all have our jobs and our lives and everything. And Pete gives up a lot of his valuable time to come in here as a volunteer at Joy and do the amazing work of putting together our website and all of us at Joy that deal with Pete and the help that he gives us, being able to put this together, we're very, very thankful for his time.
Yeah, well, it's actually more so for me a bit of fun. Really, some of the little mini banners and everything else like that, just putting up a little bit of artwork or changing the scripting so it works a little bit better, or just playing around and massaging the content. It's a bit of fun. So, yeah.
Keeps your computer geeky skills
keeps
nice and fresh.
Geeky skills going well.
Great.
So, yes.
Well, look, Pete Jarvis, thank you so much for all the work you do on the website. It does make a real difference. Of all the thousands of people that look at that website every month.
Thank you, guys.
It's a pretty important window for us. So thanks once again, and thanks for your membership and support of Joy. It's really important.
No worries at all. It's a pleasure.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
You're on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Sammy, it is 11:47 and 5 seconds. And why do I know that? Because there's these great clocks in the studio.
That's because of our amazing tech crew, including Matt, who's sitting opposite here on the panel, has done all his hard work to get these up for us.
It does. And you know what happens at 11:59 and 52? I shut up. Like that.
That silence was actually shock.
I know, it is. It is. It's a shock. Real soon we're going to have a chat with Tanya about sport, and I've got a couple of things I want to ask her about. I want to ask her about Casey Stoner, why he's retiring from MotoGP. And, you know, he's one of three great Australians in motorcycle racing. There's Casey, there's Wayne Gardner, and, of course, Mick Doohan, who I think is the greatest of all because he won five in a row.
Yeah, and some of, you know, they see it happening sometimes is that crossover, because, of course, Wayne Gardner had the crossover into the V8s for a little while.
Yeah, it didn't do very well.
No, well, we don't talk about that.
No. And Casey, I mean, it's going to be a challenge for him. Mick, and actually I know Mick quite well, he said, I don't need to do that. I'm quite happy. And, I mean, Mick even rarely rides a bike these days. You know, he injured himself pretty badly over many years. So
it is an amazingly intense sport where
extremely,
you know,
extremely physical, but very, very dangerous.
So many of them, you know, barely come away from a season of racing without having, you know, some pin inserted somewhere.
Or some part of them that no longer is there. Going to talk about, I think there was a cricketer that got married during the week. That got a bit of thing. I believe a new team in Sydney might have won a match recently, and I think what's that team in Collingwood, the black and white team?
Yes,
Sammy?
I know. Yes, and that's what I said. When it comes to talking about sport, we know Collingwood won.
Well, who else to talk to about sport but Tanya? How are you, Tanya?
Very well. How are the both of you?
Very well, thank you.
Look, we're pretty good. I wanted to ask you about Casey Stoner. Now, Casey's said that he's going to retire, and he said it's not fun anymore. He's I'm sort of thinking, what's your take on that? I mean, I don't get it.
Yeah, well, do you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking he's going to remain in motorsport. That's what I think. I think he'll probably go into something like V8 supercars, something like that. Remain in motorsport, but sort of get into something that might be less dangerous, so to speak. So, yeah, and there's a bit of money in V8s as well. So I think he's done all he can in MotoGP. He's doing really well at the moment, even though his pending retirement is a quarter of a second quicker than his nearest rival at the moment in the practice run for the French MotoGP coming up. So interesting announcement during the week, wasn't it? It was a massive surprise considering how young he is.
Yeah, and, you know, there's I just thought that it was interesting. I mean, the best place, they say, in sport to go out or in any career is when you're on the top. And I think that's been shown with some other, perhaps other motorsport drivers that have gone out on the top and tried to come back and haven't been able to.
Do you think if he does make that crossover into motorsport, as we were discussing before, you know, Wayne Gardner did many years ago, that because of his ability on the track already as a race driver, that a lot of the big teams will be after him as to add them to their field?
Oh, indeed. He's got the name too for marketing purposes as well for the sport. I suppose it's kind of like you're going from one genre to the next, and he's an absolute superstar in motorsport, one of the best ever, well, probably the best ever. And for him to go into the field of something like V8s would be a massive coup for them, and they'd be chomping at the bit, rubbing their hands together marketing-wise for someone like him to come through. And he's such a great, great young bloke as well. He's really down to earth, and I think it would be a great coup for the sport. But time will tell. Maybe his passion for motorsport full stop doesn't exist, and he's got something else in his head. But time will tell. We'll find out in 2013, no doubt.
It will. Now, there was a cricketer's wedding during the week, Tanya.
Yes.
Michael Clarke has bowled his maiden over.
Oh, you have been waiting all day to use that, haven't you, Macca?
We have to be careful. We don't want to get into one our previous record, Tanya.
Yes, that's right. We don't want to be, dirtying all these profanities.
But he came up stumps.
Yes, he certainly did. Well, she was sitting on a horse. In the reception, wasn't she?
Giddy up, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on there. But anyway, that's a good start for their relationship.
Will it put him off his game, do you think?
I think he's always playing better cricket when he's in a relationship. Have you noticed that with Michael Clarke? When he's doing well somewhere else in his life, he's doing pretty well on the pitch.
Because of course they're the wives and the partners of the cricketers and the AFL players now are also, you know, basically they're red carpet material. So every time they go to a presentation, there's the photographers there, the designers wanting to give them dresses for their presentations as well. So do you think she fits in well with all the rest of the wags?
Oh, indeed. I don't know whether you've been watching Wag Nation, which is a show that shows off about four or five different wags. So have you seen that show?
No, I didn't even know it existed.
I think I'd have to watch that before I ate.
They had a show last night about the wags being on the red carpet at the Logies, and they did the planking on the red carpet at the Logies, one of the wags. So I don't know whether she's into planking. She's certainly into sitting on top of a horse. So time will tell with her, but I think she certainly does fit the bill, doesn't she? She's Michael Clarke, certainly goes for the very pretty ladies, and he's done well for himself, I must say. But I think he's got a good one here, and she's very supportive of his cricket. And, I think it's a good start for him, and maybe they'll start a family soon, and a good start to his life for Michael Clarke. He's playing cricket well, and his personal life's going well.
It's all very wholesome, isn't it?
It is. I was surprised. It was a big surprise how kept under wraps this wedding was. I would have thought that he would have been more out there with it. But
they could have got Bingle to drive them.
Exactly.
She's not doing much useful at the moment.
She's got her own show coming up, actually, a reality show. So I wonder if comments about that would be in this reality show.
Now, what about on a sport matter? What about Ricky Nixon? His internet-based reality show.
Really think people are going to watch it?
I mean, for God's sake.
I tell you, that guy is just a waste of space, isn't he? What a disgrace, really. I think the best thing for AFL was just to get him out of that in terms of being an agent for, as people might know, he was an agent for Ben Cousins.
Yeah.
Things like a lot of issues happen surrounding it. I'm not pointing my finger at him, but it certainly was a bad, toxic environment. And I suppose he provides some sort of entertainment for some people. I don't know.
So
I don't know if he'd be interested.
Speaking of AFL, of course, my amazing black and whites got up last night to the start of this round and got over the line by 12 points at Geelong.
Yeah, five in a row for Collingwood. I can't believe that you admit that you're a Magpies fan, but there we go.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things I admit to.
That's good, as long as you admit to it. Dane Swan hamstring injury, though, that's a big concern for Collingwood, but they do have some pretty good young players coming through, so they've got a bit of depth to them at the moment. They had Alex Fasolo, he played well last night, and Pendlebury, 4 goals. There was a fantastic performance by him. But, yeah, poor old Geelong, 12-point loss, and it was certainly towards the end of the match that they lost. But it was the first loss in 11 matches at the MCG for Chris Scott, the Geelong coach. So a bit of a bad night for him. But it was certainly Collingwood's defence, which was the key, and they turned the ball around pretty quickly. So
I think the boys were looking for a bit of a payback from grand final.
They certainly did, yeah. I think it was a pretty exciting win for them because of that, and they were rubbing their hands together to go up against Geelong. It's the first win over Geelong since 2010, so they've been waiting some time to do that in front of over 75,000 people, so it was a big blockbuster for the AFL. So, yeah, fantastic start for Round 8 and some exciting matches coming up for Round 8 with Dreamtime tonight, Essendon and Richmond. I think this will be a big match for the AFL, and Essendon in certainly good form at second on the ladder at the moment.
Dreamtime for some, nightmare for another.
You certainly won't be watching it, Macca.
I won't. Look, we've got to go, Tanya. Once again, thank you for that, and let's wish Michael Clark well and hope that his wife doesn't fall off the horse.
Yes, exactly. She's got to hold the reins and keep it on top the whole time.
Giddy up. Okie doke.
Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you.
See you guys. Bye.
Well, there we go. There was our quasi-sports roundup. You're on Joy 94.9, Macca and Sammy. We're going to be back with you real soon to say goodbye.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Ticket number 69, please, number 69.
If you're looking for fresh meat, see Dunove Butchers and Small Goods. It's your one-stop shop for all your barbecue and dinner party meat requirements. From fresh meats to smoked and cured hams, plus tasty products created from traditional recipes from Eastern Europe. Dunove Butchers and Small Goods, 209 Springvale Road, Springvale. Call now. They'll even roast your meats to order. 9546 8582. Joy sponsor.
A Taste of Hollywood returns to the West.
Don't miss the Midwinter Smorgasbord of Melbourne Queer Film Festival highlights.
Presented by the City of Maribyrnong and MQFF at the beautiful Sun Theatre in Yarraville from June 1st to June 3rd.
West Hollywood presents Codependent Lesbian Space Alien Seek Same, The Green, Kawa, The Cure, Oz Shorts and Daphne.
West Hollywood. Find out more and book your tickets at mqff.com.au.
Joy 94.9 is a proud sponsor of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. We have Radiothon coming up. It starts on officially on the 2nd of June. Radiothon party is on the 1st of June. Where, Sammy?
At D&M Nightclub and Bar in Commercial Road. So it's a gold coin donation. You don't have to book. Just come on down, and it's going to be an amazing night with some Joy presenters and also lots and lots of performers.
Lots of talent's going to be there. Really, really
both
important.
On and off the stage.
On and off the stage. And, of course, Radiothon. Joy is 18 years old, so we are now an adult. And adults drive adult cars.
So this year we have been lucky enough to be given a car by our wonderful sponsor. So it's worth over $35,000, a Jeep Wrangler Sport.
Yeah, 35 grand drive away, and I guarantee that the number one station is on the radio in that Jeep Wrangler will be Joy 94.9. And it is a special thanks to all the guys at Essendon Jeep and to John Byrne who've provided that. We really, really appreciate it. We hope it works out as well for you as it's going to work out for us. I'm actually not here next week. I am in Germany, so I have no idea who's co-hosting. Could be anyone. It could be a whole lot of dead air. Anyway, it's bye from Macca.
And bye from Sammy.
Bye.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.